Good morning. My name is Maureen Sear, and I represent Keith Kaiser. I believe it's Kaiser, but I'm not quite sure about that. I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
All right.
In this prosecution for possession of child pornography, the trial court admitted, over objection, evidence of numerous sexually suggestive internet search terms and websites accessed from Mr. Kaiser's laptop, which were not linked in to any of the items suspected to be actual child pornography. The trial court also admitted over objection images of so-called child erotica, which Mr. Kaiser lawfully possessed and which were also unrelated to the charged crimes. This inflammatory other misconduct evidence was not admissible because it was not relevant to the charged crimes other than through a theory of propensity.
What about knowledge or intent? Was it relevant to knowledge, relevant to intent?
It's not admissible even if it is relevant to knowledge if the only relevance is through a theory of propensity. So ER 404B categorically excludes character evidence admitted for the purpose of proving that a person acted in conformity with character. So in other words, the theory was that because Mr. Kaiser was the kind of person, because he had a character of being sexually perhaps interested in, because he was the kind of person who was interested in searching for and possessing sexually suggestive images of young females, he must have known that the images of actual child pornography that he possessed were of actual minors. And that's a propensity theory that's improper.
Would it be propensity if, as I understood the state's theory in this case, is he had to use the internet to obtain these images that were allegedly unlawful.
Mm-hmm.
So wouldn't it be relevant to his knowledge as to how he was searching the internet in general for these kind of topics?
Again, I think that still falls under the same propensity theory because he's the kind of person who is using these internet search terms. And again, there's no link between, there's no showing what he actually came up with when doing these searches and how the images of actual child pornography that he possessed, how those were obtained. So there's no linkage between the search terms and the actual child pornography. An example of where other misconduct evidence might be admissible to show knowledge through a theory other than propensity might be in a case such as a person possesses cocaine and says, I didn't know this was cocaine, I don't know what it looks like. The state brings in evidence that this person was previously convicted of possessing cocaine, and that shows that, therefore, he knew what it looked like. So that might be a proper way to bring it in under 404B to show knowledge. And I would like to address also the state is arguing that this is actually not other misconduct evidence, so it doesn't fall under 404B, and instead the state is advocating for a res gestae kind of theory, which does not apply to this kind of evidence. I'm not aware of any authority saying that in a possession kind of crime that anything that the person possesses at the time he is found to possess contraband necessarily can come in as under a res gestae theory. Res gestae instead applies to when there's an unbroken sequence of events. So in other words, you know, it's like an event that happens and all the things that happen that are connected might come in under res gestae and do not fall under the other misconduct that addressed by ER 404B. Because the erroneous admission of this highly prejudicial evidence violated Mr. Kaiser's right to a fair trial, his convictions must be reversed. And this is this kind of evidence is particularly prejudicial in a sex crime case such as this one. The authority is well established that this kind of inflammatory evidence showing that a person has an unusual or distasteful kind of sexual interest can be highly prejudicial to the jury. The jury might naturally assume that because he has these kinds of unnatural or unsavory interests in looking at sexually suggestive images of minors that he is a person of abnormal proclivities and therefore is more likely to have committed the current crime.
Even if it were erroneous, is it harmless error, for example, taking his statement, which was admitted at trial?
His statement that he's interested in looking at images of young people? Mm-hmm. I don't think so. I mean, his statement was also had, I mean, he reiterated over and over in his statement that he always made sure that the images that he actually possessed were of adults. He visited the websites he visited, had the disclaimer saying that the images of people on this website are of adults and this is legal and et cetera, et cetera. And so although he admitted that he does have a sexual attraction to teenage girls, he also at the same time said he was very careful about not possessing images, pornographic images of minors. Unless the court has any further questions, I'll save the rest of my time for rebuttal.
We'll have 4 minutes.
Good morning. May it please the court, I'm Mara Rosano for the state. I think that I'm going to address the question that I think the court raised very appropriately as to the application of these images and search terms to the issue of knowledge and intent. The issue for the jury to decide, they had a substantial number of images of individuals that the state presented as minors engaged in sexually explicit activity. The defense was they weren't minors, or I didn't know they were minors. The issue of knowledge, knowingly possessing an image of a minor, showing what this individual had in his possession, what he had searched for and what he had, showed his knowledge that this image was of a minor.
Would that apply to Exhibit 33 if it was even a lawful image that he possessed?
Correct. Because, for example, and I know this is somewhat of a ridiculous example, but it's kind of the area I know. If I say, I thought that was a picture of a German Shepherd, and you can show that I have 1,000 images of German Shepherds, and this was a French Poodle, that might be a little bit extreme, but maybe it was an Anatolian Shepherd, so similar to a German Shepherd, but with very definite distinctions. And I'm saying, I thought all the images I had were that you can show, no, you had a bunch of images of German Shepherds. You know what a German Shepherd is. And you have this other image here that is clearly not a German Shepherd, or is close, but has all these distinctions. And your familiarity with this area, to show your knowledge, we show your familiarity with the area and the images that you have. You go further into that, into the search terms, and the search terms show what he was looking for.
So there's no dispute he had certain images. So the dispute at trial was what right. were the images and did they depict children?
There were a number of images that the state conceded were not child erotica or were child erotica, some images that were adult images, and the state conceded those. And I think that the court did a very good job of going through and parsing out which images the court felt were too prejudicial. The court felt were not relevant or that their probative value was outweighed by the prejudicial value. And even to the point of saying, there's just too many images. Cut it down. Cut it down to those that you really need to use.
Well, this entire investigation started because Microsoft made a report, as it was required to do under the law. So,
correct.
Were those specific images that they were reporting related to downloading of child pornography?
Yes.
And were those images then
part? Among the images?
Yes.
Yes, they were.
And so the defense was, well, I didn't know they were children.
That was among the defense. The defense was, I didn't knowingly possess these images, and I didn't know they were children. I thought they were all legal. That appeared to be a two-part defense.
But there's no question he had them. I mean,
I think that through the trial, by the time it came to trial, he had acknowledged that he was the individual who had been using the laptop. And I think that there was more than substantial circumstantial evidence to prove that he was the individual in both accounts that were downloading those images.
Because there was I think there was evidence that he wasn't living alone. And so,
correct.
All right. So you're saying by the time of trial, there wasn't really...
I don't think that was not argued very vociferously, and I think that in part, at least, if you recall, the prosecutor pointed out that the dates of the downloads indicated that they were downloaded before he and his girlfriend had moved into the more shared living circumstance. So the majority of the images were downloaded at that time. But there was an account that was password protected that was associated with the defendant, and then there was an account that was identified as a guest account that was also password protected. And I think that the question was, could it have been the girlfriend or could it have been someone else? That was out there, but I don't think that that was very vigorously argued by any party, because I think that the defendant himself had acknowledged sufficiently in his own statements to law enforcement. And there was also the iPad or iPhone that had the image on it that was very clearly associated with him, and it was an image that was also found amongst the images in the, I think the deleted images in the computer. So connecting those images to him personally as well. So with regard to the propensity argument, the propensity was not the argument that the state was putting forward. The state was putting forward an argument as to his knowledge of these images and what these images contained based on his possessions.
Well, it would have been the defense who would have argued propensity and therefore argued for exclusion.
Right. I think, yes, they would have argued that's the only purpose for it.
Right.
And I'm saying the state was not using that for that purpose. The state was using it for the purpose of showing his actual knowledge of the images.
And that's what the court ruled.
And that is what the court ruled as well, yes. So, if the court has any...
What about the First Amendment argument?
The First Amendment argument, I guess, and I apologize, Your Honor, the First Amendment argument as to this is protected speech. Even protected speech is admissible, and I think that the court was very clear... And I apologize, in my argument, I addressed the fact that images of child pornography or searches for child pornography is not protected speech under the First Amendment. And are you talking about the jury instruction request or the...
The argument that's made on appeal related to the First Amendment. I think the jury instruction request is different. It
right.
has to do with whether the jury instruction accurately stated the law.
Your Honor, protection under the First Amendment does not bar the admissibility of relevant evidence. Many statements would be protected statements. For example, if an individual were to indicate that they really hate people of a particular descent and they're on trial for murdering a person of that descent, say, I hate all these people and I think they all should be killed, and they're on trial for murdering someone of that particular descent, that would be relevant evidence to show motive and intent. And it would not be barred simply because it's protected under the First Amendment. It's the First Amendment. You are protected in your speech, but what we say can be used in trial if it's relevant and admissible under admissible evidence. In this situation, it is, and I think that's what the court has held.
Well, that's why I asked about Exhibit 33, because arguably possession of it is not misconduct.
Correct.
And it's not, so it would be protected under the First Amendment. But it's still nevertheless relevant in the state's view on knowledge.
Correct. And therefore relevant
because
and therefore
useful admissible. Because it's youthful images.
It's youthful images, and it's images that show his knowledge of the age of the individuals involved in a comparative manner. I guess finally, counsel did not touch on, but I'd like to touch on briefly, the proposed jury instruction. I argued that jury instruction was a misstatement of the law. It could be extremely misleading, and the court did not allow it and appropriately did not abuse its discretion in not allowing it, the indication that the First Amendment protects images of individuals who appear to be minors could easily be argued to say that the First Amendment protects images of minors, because minors obviously appear to be minors. And the way that it was phrased, it was a misstatement of the law, was properly not allowed. So, unless the court has any further questions, I'll sit down.
Thank you. The question in this case is not, in regard to the element of knowledge, it's not really whether Mr. Kaiser knew what a child looked like. I mean, that wasn't the question. So therefore, the German Shepherd analogy doesn't apply. It's not like he's saying, I don't know what a child looks like, and the state brings in images showing that of children that he knew were children, and so therefore it shows that he knew that these images that he possessed of child pornography were of actual children. Instead, what they show, that the images of that he lawfully possessed of child erotica and the website search terms, instead what that shows is that he has an interest in accessing or looking at images, sexually suggestive images of children, and therefore he's the kind of person who has a sexual interest in children, and therefore he's more likely to have committed the current crime, which is a theory of propensity. And in regard to the element, in regard to whether or not the evidence was admissible to show intent, that it would not be admissible to show intent because intent is not an element of the crime. It's not a material issue in this case.
The defense didn't seriously argue that other people had access to the computer in this case, did they? At trial.
I think there was perhaps it was up in the air whether or not someone else might have accessed the images, but I think it was clear that he was the one who was the primary user of the laptop. And also, just to reemphasize, that whether or not Mr. Kaiser had a sexual interest in children was also not an element of the crime. That's not something that the state is required to prove. Instead, the state was required to prove that he knew he was possessing the images and that he knew that the images depicted minors. And in terms of the First Amendment argument, it is true that even protected speech can be admissible if it's relevant to the crime. Here we're arguing it wasn't relevant. This is a violation of his First Amendment right to possess these images, which he lawfully possessed, because they were admitted only under a theory of propensity, and therefore they were really not admissible, and the admission violated his First Amendment rights.
Does that argument apply to the search terms? That mainly applies to the photographs, the images of the young girl.
There's less of the argument is less strong in terms of the search terms, but I think that he does have a First Amendment right to search for things on the Internet. I mean, that's quite clear. It's true also, though, that the U.S. Supreme Court has held that attempts to, that the state can criminalize attempts to obtain child pornography, even if there's no proof that the person actually possessed child pornography. So, again, we think that this evidence was erroneously admitted, was highly prejudicial and inflammatory. It prejudiced the verdict, and the verdict must be reversed. Thank you.